This is SG2 Perspectives, a conversation with SG2 experts and industry thought leaders about the biggest trends in healthcare and what we expect that's going to mean for the future of healthcare delivery.
I would probably point to five key characteristics that seem to be common themes of top performers. The first one is the focus on growth. The second one is moving to more progressive payer partnerships. The third area is revenue quality. The fourth area is a continued focus on operations. And the last common characteristic of top performers is diversification. When you're talking to organizations that are doing much better, they have five obsessions.
Welcome to SG2 Perspectives. I'm your host, Trevor Duren. Today's episode, we're going to get a lens into how CFOs are looking at 2024, where they're trying to find opportunities, where they see some glimmers of sunlight. And to do that, from SG2's team, I have Brian Esser, a familiar voice you all know. And from Vizient, Mike Bush, who leads so many of our C-suite networks because he's played most of the roles in a health system C-suite before joining Vizient. He's been a COO, a CFO, a CSO. He's a great resource that whenever Brian and I get his time, we're happy to take it. So now we get to share all that with you. Brian, I'm going to go to you first. We pay pretty close attention to our partner Kaufman Hall's numbers on overall industry margin and revenue. It's brighter than it was last year, but unpack those numbers. What are you seeing? How are others interpreting what that means today and what it might mean at the end of the year?
Trevor, good to see you. And Mike, glad you're here to correct all the mistakes I'm about to make. We're seeing some positive improvement from the flash report data just through the end of December of 2023. The overall median margins have crept back into the positive range. We ended the year at 2.3% as the median, which is great, but not that 3, 4, 5% average that we'd like to see and feel is probably the sustainability level for most organizations. So a lot of pushes and pulls there, but I would dive even deeper into some of the other numbers that our good friends and colleagues there have brought forth. One is the CFO confidence level. We saw roughly a third in their most recent survey of CFOs say they are expecting some covenant challenges or debt issues coming in the next 12 months. So still a bit of a pessimism on the CFO side. And we also saw a decline in days cash on hand, annual debt service from S&P being reported, with two of the three major credit rating agencies putting the nonprofit sector on deteriorating or negative status. So we're not out of the woods yet. There's still a lot of variability. And then from the expense side, wages continue to be high, expenses as well. We're trying to still chase a lot of that out of the market. And the last thing, Trevor, is just the M&A world. Slowed down a bit in 23, not as many, but larger acquisition dynamics going on. And the big number that stood out there was 28%, the number of announced transactions that involved a financially distressed party, which was double the prior year. So we're seeing a lot of acquisition dynamics probably due to market pressure and business issues occurring. But Mike, what would you highlight there?
Brian, that's a really good summary. This report is kind of a tale of extremes. While overall, we've seen progress in margins consistently over the last few months in that 1% to 2% range, 40% of the hospitals are still losing money from operations while they're improving. It seems that we have certain organizations that are pulling away from the pack and are doing really well, and we still have organizations that are underwater and continuing to try to get back to break even.
Kaufman Hall does break down margin improvement year over year across different segments. And we did see the overall most solid improvement in the 500-bed plus organizations, your larger super tanker type organizations, systems along those lines, whereas those in the 200 to 300-bed range reported the lowest year over year improvement from 2022 through 23. Most of the regions improved, but the Midwest did show a slight decline as compared to all the others in the 19 to 20% year over year improvement range. There is a regional variability, and that could be payer dynamics, population issues, whatever it may be, impacting the organizations.
Those organizations that maybe have a higher case mix and maybe have more of a balanced payer portfolio, their results look a little better than those that are higher government pay and may not have the level of more complex patients that typically have higher margins attached to them.
Mike, zero in on the two extremes. On the end, that's doing better. How are top performers looking at this year? Where are they trying to find growth or bright spots? What's their outlook?
These top performing organizations that seem to be drifting away from the pack, there's some common characteristics we see among high performers. And I would probably point to five key characteristics that seem to be common themes of top performers. The first one is really a focus on growth. In that basket is really the top performers working on enhancing access, outpatient growth in their primary and secondary markets, improving capacity through more effective management of length of stay and ambulatory capacity, and then really focused on service line optimization. How can they open up access and improve growth rates in the specific signature service line? The second one is moving to more progressive payer partnerships. We've had a run now for the last couple of years of some fairly hostile relationships between providers and health systems and payers. We're starting to see those organizations that have moved away from those more hostile type of relationships to more partner relationships seem to be doing better, whether it's through contract renewals or value-based care strategy or how they approach the medical group side of the business. The investments are being made there. Those partnerships seem to be common themes of top performers. The third area is really in revenue quality. It's very clear that payer performance and accountability and revenue cycle performance continues to be top of mind of health systems, as well as CDI documentation optimization. But this whole focus on revenue quality and improving revenue quality is another characteristic of those who are top performers. The fourth area is a continued focus on operations. Several of our CFOs that I've talked to have mentioned a return to precision. How can we be more precise about how we're managing out contract labor? We have several top performers who have eliminated contract labor on the inpatient staffing side. And while they still use it in some of the back office functions and some of the other areas of support services, they've been able to really move that needle. And there's a direct tie to positive performance in that space. Supply spend reduction continues to be top of mind in that space. And then rationalizing medical group investments. This continues to be a pain point for most of the organizations. Those top performers have strategies that start to rationalize some of those investments and to improve performance. And the last common characteristic of top performers is diversification. And those who are really pursuing alternative margin sources, there's a lot of new thinking about pharmacy differently as an enterprise and as a system business that generates margin and improves efficiency. A lot of move in the non-acute investments in ambulatory surgery, home care, and those other assets that provide options and alternatives for enhanced revenues. Those are the five areas, the consistent themes. It seems the top performers, when you're talking to organizations that are doing much better, they have five obsessions. Quality and safety being one of them. The top performers have an absolute obsession about how they get better at care coordination, direct link to quality and safety. Culture and workforce. I've seen an uptick in attention of CFOs on partnering with the C-suite on improving workforce culture as a pathway to improving retention of employees and recruitment. That obsession on culture seems to be elevated among top performers as one of the common themes. Enterprise analytics, it seems that the top performers are increasing their level of insight and precision through more robust analytics. Consumer engagement, getting close to the consumer as a pathway of growth, a common theme and obsession of those who are top performers. And last is partnerships, really leaning in heavily to technology partnerships, payer partnerships, alternative margin streams, partnering with other health systems. Those top performers really are obsessive about looking for value-added partnerships. Those are the areas that I would classify as table stakes and obsession common among top performers.
What are some of the leading CFOs bullish about when they think about this year, if their margin's already in that more sustainable 3, 4, 5% range? What are they bullish about to bump them up to the next level or maintain those levels? Because I'd say that's way more sustainable than 1.5% or 2% margins.
Trevor, I really appreciate this question because this is the glass half full versus the traditional glass half empty. There are a lot of threads of positive trends and optimism that I hear from CFOs who are bending the curve. Margins are improving. There's no question that the Kaufman Hall data, the Centellus data, all of the data points we see about progressive trends, that margins are improving. Even though 40 to 50% of health systems continue to lose money, margins are improving. And we're doing a better job in cost management. We're doing a better job achieving growth objectives. There's an improvement there. Progressive focus and attention on culture has a direct tie to some of the challenges in workforce, particularly in retention of employees. We're doing a better job at solving for capacity. Organizations are stressed with inpatient capacity constraints. We're doing a better job at care coordination, at length of stay management, which opens up the funnel for growth. We're seeing some positive progress in organizations that are focused on revenue quality. And the other trend I've seen even in the last 6 months among CFOs is having an appreciation for the focus on health equity and what efficiencies can be gained in terms of capacity and access in focusing on the data that we see out of the Vizient Vulnerability Index. How can we get better at care coordination of our most vulnerable populations? And what are the direct areas of benefit that accrue to the health system by being more effective at leaning into both the analytics and the care coordination of the vulnerable population? So those are just a few. There are some of our large academic centers and larger members that have pretty large scale building projects still. The dialogue with CFOs in the last year or so is a move to more asset light investments that have a direct line of sight to connecting with the consumer and ambulatory growth, moving away from the heavy bricks and mortar. Maybe this is an obvious point that we should highlight. Pursuing cost strategies alone will not recover financial performance. Many of our organizations are really efficient now. Their efficiency continues to grow, but focusing on cost alone isn't going to be adequate enough to get to the margins where we really need to be in that 2 to 4% margin range. We've got to grow. We've got to do things differently in the care process in order to be able to have a sustained financial performance.
Thanks so much for sharing. That's great. I heard one system say recently, we're really good at care coordination when the patients stay within our system. Yeah. What proportion of all your patients is that? And that's the easy part. To your point, I think you're totally right. They're more focused on it and realize that by focusing on just those most vulnerable populations, the ones that get lost the most and have the most touch points, it can make a huge impact. One of the places we've heard recent progress on, whether it's AI, new algorithms, other data tools, using better analytics to focus on those most at-risk populations. Brian, systems just have so many analytical and data tools now. How do you not get bogged down? How do they keep it focused on decision-making? This is an area of research you focused on. How does it become an asset, especially when we're looking for just this narrow segment of potential bets to make this year? How does it not just become analysis paralysis?
Mike, you sent a note to me the other day of an organization might have too much data because now we're getting into this world of streams of data coming in. What do we do with all these dashboards and influx of interesting data points, but to make sense of it all in a meaningful way? It goes back to the growth equation that we put out a couple of years back, but I think is maybe even more important now. And it's this idea of, as an organization, how relevant are you with your consumers, your payers, the key stakeholders in your community and wider, plus diversification? How do you think about diversification and your traditional offerings, acute care, ambulatory assets, the alternative revenue generation, partnerships, your physician enterprise is, what it should morph into or maybe get away from, times, ultimately scalability. What is your reach? Is your reach still limited to your primary service area? How does it expand? How do you push into digital frontiers, post-acute, home, all of that, and really think about your entire system of care maybe differently and larger in a geographic and a touch point basis? So relevance plus diversification times scalability. If you can match all of those and have a true North Star, I think that's where you'll see a lot of traction very quickly.
That's a good setup because I want to come back to Mike. If I'm a chief strategy officer, how do I make a compelling pitch to mostly the CFO, but the whole C-suite? How do you combine those pieces to make a really effective pitch right now?
Having been in a position of making those pitches, I always viewed the chief strategy officer as the pitch professionals. They're a master, obviously, at crafting strategy and evaluating priorities and investment alternatives. Our CSOs are masters at this. Where the game is changing a bit is, goes back to your previous question about analytics. Do we have the essential tools to be able to evaluate those alternatives? Do we have the analytic tools in the clinical domain or in the market performance domain or in the operational domain to be able to have enough of those crisp analytics to tell a story about why organizations should invest in X or should invest in Y? And I think where the chief strategy officer can really play a vital role is leading the framing of that analytic strategy at the enterprise level, because there's a lot of our organizations that either don't have enough data. We had an organization that we've engaged with over the last few weeks that they feel they have too much. The chief strategy officer can play a vital role in being the governor of how do we use our various data assets in a way that tells a compelling story about alternative investments and where we should make bets. It's so clear that our top performers are making bets in certain areas, and deciding which ones to make are grounded by really great analytics. And I think the CSO can be that person that provides that rigor about, do we have the right tools? And then do we have the right governance? What we heard from this member is that they have so many distributed parts of the organization that do analytics. Do they have agreement about what benchmarks to use? Or do they have agreement about what data tools to use? And I think the CSO can play a vital role in being that executive who leads good data governance and then deploying that to identify different alternatives. I would argue that all capital and operating investments are strategic, especially now, because they're either tied to growth or they're tied to cost performance or they're tied to how the organization performs clinically.
Mike, I love the way you frame that, because we sometimes think about the CSO as kind of graduating out of the day-to-day planning and analysis work that is so important to the organization, but they need to be focused elsewhere. But it's really helpful to hear from you that it's still really valuable, that the rest of the organization can view them as the source of truth or the guide of which analytics data, et cetera, for which pieces. Because just like you said, I see top performing organizations have pretty clear understanding across the org. We use this data for this kind of insight. We use this data for this kind of insight. And I'm sure we've all seen plenty where there's data all over the place, but maybe not uniformity.
One other thing in the CSO realm is most of our organizations, whether you're margin negative or margin positive, everyone's chasing a performance gap. And those organizations are committed to innovation. It's a blessing and a curse. The blessing is that you're always coming up with new ideas about how you're going to improve and perform better. The curse is, do you have too many projects you're working on? Project bandwidth is a major concern of our organizations as they're pursuing improvement. One of the cautions that we are in dialogue with our members about is there's this tendency to say, we're going to self-perform everything, that only our teams can work. We don't want to spend money on resources or consultants or solutions. The CSOs could play a vital role in defining what the project bandwidth is, and then how do we chase opportunities we all feel bullish about, and who are we going to partner with to be able to chase and realize some of those opportunities.
That's really good. I love that. I always really value getting your perspective, Mike and Brian. So thanks so much for sharing. Talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Trevor. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Brian. Good to see you.
Thanks so much for listening to SG2 Perspectives. As always, I really value your feedback, input, comments, or ideas for episodes, and you can reach us at sg2perspectives@sg2.com. Additionally, I recommend that you check out some of the other Vizient podcasts, which cover a range of clinical and operational areas. Those can all be found at vizientinc.com/podcasts.